is the place with the helpful hardware, folks.
It's Ace's biggest LED light bulb sale of the year. Right now, buy one, get one free on our best-selling LED light bulbs. Our 4-pack of LED bulbs is $9.99, and our 2-pack of LED floodlights is only $12.99. Buy one, get one free. There's no limit on how much you can save, so stock up now. Hurry in. Buy one, get one free on long-lasting 10-year LED bulbs, now through Monday, only at your neighborhood Ace. See participating stores for details.
Daddy, where do babies come from?
Honey?
Mommy went to the store.
Oh, well, you see, there's a mommy and a daddy, right?
Right.
And see, when they call Geico, they could save a bunch of money on car insurance.
Oh, really? And that makes them happy?
Yes, that makes them very happy.
That's good.
Yeah. Well, I'm glad we could have this talk, Sunshine.
Geico, because saving 15% or more on car insurance is always a great answer.
You are Locked On Cavaliers, your daily podcast on the Cleveland Cavaliers, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to this episode of Locked On Cavaliers. As always, I am Chris Manning, your host from Fear the Sword and the Step Back. Today, it's a mailbag. It's a Monday, so I'm going to answer your questions about everything you guys submitted. Got maybe the most questions we've ever gotten, so it's going to be a bit of a longer mailbag, which is great because there's kind of a lot of fun things to talk about right now, which is, you know, a bit abnormal from what we would normally have, but do want to update you on some news. Kevin Love, if you didn't already see this news on Fear the Sword or wherever else on Twitter, is going to miss Tuesday's game with a left knee injury. So that means Kevin Love won't be playing in the Cavs' one trip to Minnesota for the year. It means he will not be making his return. It's something he actually talked about on Saturday as being something of, he was excited about it. It's still special for him because of the relationships he still has there, and it's where he really grew up as an NBA player, so that's a bit of a bummer for him and for Minnesotans looking to see Kevin Love play and see him come back that one time a year the Cavs go there. But it's a lesson. Left knee pain he suffered against the Nuggets. He was icing his knees after the game in the locker room, so some of the issues we've heard about now, maybe we could have led into those a little bit because he was sitting there for maybe longer than normal, icing his knees. He had an MRI at the Cleveland Clinic, and for whatever it is, the Cavs haven't really specified, it's going to keep him out for Tuesday's game. It probably, potentially could keep him out Wednesday as well. We don't know yet for sure. Still 2 days to really decide that, but I think it's also possible that he could not play in the All-Star game on Sunday. I know that that's a long ways away, and I know he's not, you know, it's not like Kevin Love is old, but he's in his prime. You know, if you're the Cavs, you want to be very cautious with this. He already has some back issues. If he's having some knee pain, if there's anything severely wrong there or potentially serious, I think the safest route is going to be to rest him. It is really about making sure he's healthy for the playoffs. It's making sure he's healthy for the season when it really matters for the Cleveland Cavaliers. So keep that in mind. Keep in mind that Kevin Love does have some knee pain. Maybe don't expect him to play before the All-Star break. Maybe don't expect him to play in the All-Star game. I kind of think that's honestly the safest route. And look, if he does get off that long, let's say he has off all that time, he would have off from the February 11th till February 23rd. That's 12 days of full rest. And of course, he'll be working out. He'll be rehabbing and working on his knees and stuff, but that could be a really beneficial thing for him, just to get his legs fresh, to get his knees feeling good, and I think there could be some benefit there to Kevin Love not having to play up until then. I think if you're for the Cavs, that's a selfish thing you'd want, but if he's good to go, let him play in the All-Star game. It'd be really hard, actually, to be honest with you, with Joel Embiid's injury situation and Paul Millsap already being on the team, and then Jabari Parker's, you know, ACL tear. It'd be really hard to find a front court guy to replace Kevin Love. So the East All-Star team could get a little bit wonky there. But that's what's up with Kevin Love. I don't think he's a particularly severely injured guy. I mean, he wasn't in bad spirits after the game. I mean, pain is normal, and he's a big, so take that for what it is, but we'll see. Wouldn't read too much into it yet until we kind of get more information. The Cavs' press release was not particularly descriptive, so we'll have to see. And additionally, Amon Shumpert does say he does hope to play before the All-Star break. Cleveland.com's Joe Varden caught up with Shump before the Cavs played the Nuggets. First, we really heard from Shump since his injury. He was ruled out before the game. He was ruled out for however long, and Ty Lue was not sure exactly how long Shumpert's going to be out, but he did say that he's a bionic man, that he heals fast. But this is what Shump had to say. Quote, "I would love to play before the All-Star break. I'm not trying to sit out, but I'm also not going to lie to myself to push through something when it's completely healed, and when it's not completely healed, excuse me. Just want to get through this next part of the season healthy." That's pretty on point for what I think Shumpert should approach that. He also said, quote, "Probably the most swelling I've ever had on anything besides ACL and getting my knee drained. When I saw it swell up like that, it wasn't a pretty situation, but the swelling went down pretty fast, so I've been getting ready all day and night, making sure it hurt against the Wizards on last Monday, a week back from today. He hurt his ankle defending Bradley Beal, collapsed, and that was sort of the issue there, but it doesn't seem like it's something that's going to keep him out too much longer. There was a thought that maybe he could play this weekend, but it seems like he's getting close. Again, but I think the thing for him might be just resting after the All-Star break. You don't have anything to gain in winning Tuesday and winning Wednesday. You frankly don't, but we'll see if they play. And I think the Cavs like to get some of their depth back. I think you can get by, but they want to play at a certain level, and Shumpert would help you rest LeBron James as well. So there's probably some value to Shumpert playing. But again, he could be out until February 23rd if that's what the Cavs want to do. And I, again, think that might be a smart play. And then before we get to the mailbag questions, I do want to let you know that today's podcast is brought to you by SeatGeek. SeatGeek is the best way for you to buy and sell tickets right on your smartphone. It's a free app you can get on any Android or any iPhone. They also have a great website. And again, it's free. You can find any ticket you want on SeatGeek. They have concerts, they have sporting games, they have plays, if that's your thing. You can find anything on SeatGeek, and it's all going to be rated based on how good of a deal it's going to be. If it's green, it's good. If it's red, it's a bad deal. And you're going to get to see the view from whatever seat you're interested in as well. So you know exactly what you're going to see. There are no hidden fees. There are no hidden costs. There's nothing sneaky about SeatGeek. You're getting a great deal no matter what. And my listeners today can save $20 on that first purchase by using the promo code LOCAVS. That's LOCAVS. And you're going to get $20 on that first SeatGeek purchase by entering that promo code under the settings tab when you open that app for the first time or go on the website. I use SeatGeek a bunch. You've heard me say it on the show before. I use SeatGeek if I need a ticket and I can't get it from the team or the venue. I go to SeatGeek because I know I'm going to get the best deal, because I know that you're going to get jacked up on other websites, and SeatGeek's not going to do that to you. I just got Migos tickets that I saved a bunch of money on because I got them on SeatGeek, and you can do the same thing. Use that promo code LOCAVS, download SeatGeek today. First question today comes from Twitter user at Chris16SuperScienceSaint. He asks, will Deal's defensive versatility be the key for him to make the roster? And in this case, I think he means continuing on the roster. So I would say no. I think it's more so his just overall versatility, that he can play the 3 and the 4. I think offensively he can fill those spots well enough to stick, and I think that means he's going to take some of the minutes burden off LeBron and off Richard Jefferson. I think it's a bit wishful thinking to think this, perhaps, but I think Williams could be the reason the Cavs start resting LeBron a bit more. I don't necessarily think the Cavs will be fully comfortable with resting LeBron because they have Williams, especially if he's still on a 10-day deal. But I think if you're looking at a reason to get LeBron rest, if you're looking at a reason to get LeBron down to 34 minutes a game instead of 41, or whatever he's going to play in certain minutes, like if you can cut that 7 minutes out there, he's the way to do it. And I think if you're worried about Jefferson's minutes piling up as well, Williams is the way to do that. And you can figure, especially if Shumpert comes back and J.R. Smith comes back in about a month, you can mitigate those minutes over the last bit of the season. Because really, with February being a short month, the Cavs are 6 weeks away from the playoffs once this month. And I mean, it's going to sneak up on us fast. So be ready, and I think Williams is just, again, versatility as a whole is what makes him useful to this Cavs team and him sticking around. And I do think that he is going to stick around beyond 10 days. I have a story up on Fear the Sword based on reporting from the locker room about LeBron's saying he's going to be around for more than 10 days. Juan's around for more than 10 days. William's saying he wants to be here. Joe Varden of Cleveland.com had a report about that as well. So take that for what you will. I think as long as he doesn't get hurt, as long as something crazy doesn't happen, I think there's a very, very good chance he's around for more than 10 days. Kawasi at Elijah Mensa 36 asks, what does Derek Williams' ceiling look like now? So I think it's as a high-level-ish role player for the Cavs. And by high level, I don't mean like he's going to be the Tristan Thompson, but I just think he's going to fill minutes really, really well. I think he's going to provide energy. I think he's going to do some really, really nice things for the Cavs. I think him playing 20 minutes a game for the rest of the regular season doesn't totally seem out of the question. I think what he is makes a lot of sense. I think him being such a high energy guy is something that's going to endear him to everybody else. And I think there's a lot to like about what we're seeing with Derek Williams. I think it's the best case scenario from when the Cavs signed him to now isn't necessarily different, but I do think it's more likely than what it might have been. And I think that's him playing a lot of minutes and making everything sort of work. Next question comes from at Space Fun Mars. And this is where I'm going to get the hot take cannon ready. Does Derek Williams' play in his first two games, for his two games with the Cavs, prove everyone who wanted to draft him first was right? Yeah, clearly, guys, should have taken Derek Williams and Kyrie, because Tristan Thompson, what is this guy? I think Williams has just been fun, and it's sort of bonkers that the Cavs do have a lot of 2011 draft guys. If you want to look it up, Cavs have Liggins, Irving, Thompson, Shumpert, and now Williams from the 2011 draft, all in this roster. And then three Arizona Wildcats in Channing Frye, Richard Jefferson, and Derek Williams. Just some fun little trivia there. Next question. This came before they got Williams, but I'm going to answer it an interesting way. This comes from Bill Flugin. He asked, why aren't the Cavs taking advantage of 10-day contracts? So I think the reason you get Williams and not someone like Lance is just I think you think about how you're going to utilize them and having a clear role for them. That's sort of my understanding of how the Cavs approach these things. It does cost you $50,000 to get Derek Williams. You're not just going to spend that money on someone who's not going to play. So I think when they see Williams and they see this guy who, yes, fell out of Miami's rotation, and as much as he says he asked for his release, and I think that is true. Okoro White really had pushed him out of the rotation a little bit there and kind of made him dispensable for Miami. So I think there is something to the fact that he had played really bad, but the Cavs saw a way he could fill a role and then plug him in and play him 20 minutes a game. Because, if you're going to pay a guy and you're going to sign with that 10-day deal, typically when teams do this, it's either for extreme depth purposes or they just need to fill that for 10 days. The Cavs clearly saw a need to get Derek Williams to fill minutes, and I think if you look at what's going to happen on Tuesday, no Kevin Love, Derek Williams is probably going to play a lot in that game. And he's a former T-Wolf, which is pretty funny, but he's going to play, and you needed him, and it helps you give guys rest and all these different things. So I think they didn't necessarily utilize 10-day contracts just because they didn't see a guy that they could just plug in right away. That's sort of my read on it. James Watson at JimRun85 asks, which Canton Charge player has the best chance of getting a 10-day contract in the NBA? Cook or Moreland? Keep up the great work. So thanks for the compliment. I would say I'm a big Quinn Cook fan. We have another question about him that I'm going to get to, but I do think Cook could come in and play right away. Moreland has been in the NBA before, and I don't think he proved that much when he was with Sacramento. So I would say Cook, but that's just sort of, I think Cook is a better NBA prospect than Moreland. If you go read Chris Reichert's NBA D-League rankings, which you should every week, the call-up rankings he does over at the Step Back, Quinn Cook is primarily in the top 3 to 4 players on that list. And Chris knows the D-League better than anybody. He knows more about the Charge than basically anybody that I follow on the internet. So you should check those out. And Cook is pretty high for me, thinks he can be an NBA point guard, and I tend to agree. So we'll get to that question about Quinn Cook next, and that comes from Ali via email. And he asked, you've talked a lot about how the Cavs are not interested in getting Quinn Cook and not giving him a look, but can you break him down from your point of view and talk about if he's actually an NBA player? So I think he is an NBA player. I think if you watch game film of him and you watch him play, what he's doing with the charge is sort of impressive because he's really the hub of their offense. He's doing most of the distributing. He's doing most of the initiating. He's doing a lot of the scoring on and off the ball, and he's setting other players up. He's setting up guys like Chris Evans. He's setting up guys like Eric Moreland and John Holland and Jonathan Holmes. Even when Kay Felder was there and Kay Felder was given kind of the reins to the offense, Quinn Cook still had a really, really nice game and was in a lot of ways more efficient than Kay Felder in that game. I think he looks like he's a capable spot-up shooter. He's got the right size to be an NBA point guard. He dribbles pretty well. He has a good read on the offense. He can make those longer reads where he throws it on the floor and sets some guys up. There's a play last week where he hit Chris Evans on an ATO for a lob where he just recognized that Evans was open and threw this really nice lob to him. I think where his issues come is that he tries to do too much at times, and I don't think you want that out of a backup point guard. I think when you watch him play, there are moments where I feel like he does dribble too much. I do think he is just trying to do so much sometimes that I think it hurts him, and I think you see him over-dribble as a result. And it's not like he's a Kyrie Irving where the over-dribbling sometimes is part of the process, and as much as the aesthetic of that and the function of that can be debated, Kyrie can pull that stuff off. He can break guys down off the dribble. He can use those extra dribbles to knock some guy on his ankles and create an opening for himself. Cook doesn't quite have those handles. I think he also, his court vision isn't great. I think he makes a lot of the simple reads, and I think he does a lot of things really well as a distributor, but I don't think it's particularly advanced. Like, I don't think he's ever going to be a starting NBA point guard. But I do think he's an NBA player. I think he was the D-League Rookie of the Year. He's been a D-League All-Star this year. I think he's really, really been a capable NBA player, and I think he's a guy helped Duke win a national title, is just shooting really, really well again. I mean, his rookie year in the D-League, this year he's averaging 19.6 points, or this is what he averaged last year, 19.6 points, 5.4 assists, 3.9 boards, shooting 46% from the field, and 38% from Hanuk. That's what he did last year, and he was just fantastic last year. And he's 6'2", not particularly big, but if he finishes in the D-League over 60% in the restricted area, he does all these things well, he checks all these boxes. The over-dribbling, I think a lack of elite athleticism, and his tendency to shoot a lot of mid-range shots is a bit of an issue. I think if you look at what he is this year, he's up to 26 points a game, he's up to 6.6 assists, still shooting 48% from the field, still 36% from three. Catch and shoot numbers aren't exactly available for D-League players, but I would guess he's doing pretty well on catch and shoot. I think he's an NBA player. I think there are question marks with his size, with his overall athleticism, with his court vision, and with his tendency to do too much. But I think if you put him in a situation where he wasn't the lead player, I think he could compartmentalize a lot of what he's doing and apply it in small doses at a very high level backup point guard. If you're looking at who the Cavs have been linked to and who they've, signed, I guess, I think he's a better prospect than Kay Felder. Kay Felder is more athletic. Probably Kay Felder has these really nice bursts and he can get really high, but I think Cook's a more polished player. I think he's a better shooter, and I think the 6'2 isn't huge for a point guard, but it's better than 5'9. And I think there are certainly cons to him, but I am a fan of what Kay Felder is and what he could become, and I think someone is going to sign him, and someone is going to probably get a good backup point guard. I think the other thing that works against him is that he is playing at a very saturated position. There are just a ton of good point guards out there, and sometimes you just kind of get lost in the shuffle of different things. Next question comes from an email, Perry Kellis. He says, solid trade scenario on Bleach Report predictions, just asking how it sounds to you. The scenario is Cavs get Rubio, Nash, Jordan Hill. Brandon Rush, not Nash, Jordan Hill. T-Wolves get Shumpert, McRae, Anderson, and a trade exception. He said, what do you think? I'm not really a Shumpert fan. I like his offensive improvement, but never really thought he was that good of a defender. Overhyped in that area. I do think he's overhyped in that area, personally. But this trade is interesting, but It has drawbacks. Rush is a downgrade of a defender over Shumpert, for one. Rubio isn't a great fit for the Cavs because you can't really play him with Kyrie like you could play some other backup point guards, and he's not a good shooter off the ball, so he's not exactly a perfect LeBron fit. You'd think he might get more open looks because he's playing with LeBron and with Kyrie, but he's not a great fit in that area. And Hill's kind of unplayable. I guess he would give you big man depth, but you're not giving up a pick, which is nice. I think the biggest thing here is I don't think that's probably enough to get Rubio. I just don't know if that actually gets you Rubio. And then you got to think about the salaries, and you'd probably have to play Liggins more. And I think that is a nice idea. I don't love the Rubio fit. I think there are maybe better shooting options. But what he is a creator and as a defender is fantastic. And I'm a big Rubio fan. I don't hate it. I don't love it either, though. I can see clear reasons why both teams say no. And if I'm the Wolves, I might want a little bit more for Rubio, even if it is a saturated position market. I got a Facebook question. First one of these, actually, in a message from Marbinino Miranda. He said, should the Cavs give Jimmer Fredette a look? He's putting up big numbers in China. No. Flatly, no. Jimmer's doing really good things in China because he's playing in China. And that's sort of the explanation there. I mean, China, you're just going to put a bunch of big numbers up, and it's going to happen, and there's nothing really else to say that. I mean, he's good in China. He's clearly not an NBA-quality player, and I think there are a bunch of other point guard options out there. Quinn Cook would be better than Jimmy Fredette. I'd rather play Kay Fowler more than having Jimmy Fredette. Our next question is another one from James Watson. Do you think the Cavs should try to get Williams to sign a 2-year deal like McRae did last year with the second team, a team option? All right, let's all just not get ahead of ourselves a little bit on this. I think he is fun. I think there's certainly a chance he'll be here next year. I think the best way to look at this is that he would probably be best served for himself to. Well, and really for the Cavs, I guess, to sign a veteran's minimum and just play and see if he can get paid again. McRae wasn't going to have many other options. I'm not sure Williams will either, but I'm not sure the Cavs really would have a need to give him that second year. And we have to see how he plays the rest of the year and if they keep him around. I think long term, which LeBron is, you know, had said that they want to keep him around for the long term, that could mean the end of the season. I mean, he's on a 10-day contract, and long-term really good functioning mean the end of the season. It depends on what else the Cavs do in the summer. I don't hate the idea of keeping him around, but I think just one-year deals for him make a lot more sense. I mean, of course, his market could go up this summer, and some team could pay him a bunch of money, but I don't think that's likely, and I think you're probably better off just getting him on one-year deals. That's the way you can do it. I guess if the second year bit is team controlled, sure, and you know the Cavs have to cut into their mid level exception, and the cap could be weird. I think veterans minimums for him, if he's staying in Cleveland past the end of the year, functionally make a lot more sense to me, at least. And the last question comes from James Watson. He again asks, what do you think the percentage is that Korver is here for more than just the rest of the season? So he did tell Cleveland.com's Joe Vardon, going to go back to Joe because he's been killing it, as he always does, over on the beat. He did say that he wants to be in Cleveland past this year, that he'd at least be open to it. I do think he is in a position in his career where that sort of thing makes sense. I do think he is in a position where he's probably not going to get another big contract. I don't think it's a guarantee that some team's going to pay him a bunch of money to leave. I do think the Cavs. I do think it could get interesting. At the same time, I do think there's a good chance he sticks around. I'm going to go 60% as just a guess. I don't know that for sure. I don't know 100% what his future looks like. But he's fitting in great. He's at a point of his career where he's probably going to try to win a lot and pursue winning more so than in a contract. And again, I don't think a lot of people are going to give him a big contract. So I'm going to go 60%. That's just a guess. And we'll have to see what the summer holds. The Cavs' summer, in a lot of ways, is going to be really fascinating. All right, so that's going to be it for today's mailbag. Got, again, a lot of great questions. Thank you again for everyone who submitted them. Again, submit those again next week to @LockedOnCavs on Twitter or to LockedOnCavs@gmail.com. Thanks again to SeatGeek for being the presenting sponsor of this podcast. Again, go download the app. Use that promo code LOCAVS. Save $20 on that first SeatGeek purchase. Go see Migos. Go see a Cavs game before the break. Go see something fun that you can save $20 on now because you got that SeatGeek promo courtesy of this podcast. So thanks again to SeatGeek, and we'll talk to you guys again tomorrow. We're going to be previewing Cavs Wolves with Zach Bennett, who we heard from last week. I'm going to talk a little about Kevin Love not playing in Minnesota and what he meant to the Wolves, just because I want to pick his brain on that, and we'll be back tomorrow. So for Lockdown Cavs, this has been Chris Manning, and we'll see you tomorrow. Peace.
Okay, Kevin, for the grand prize of $1 million, what color is the White House?
I know this.
5 seconds.
Oh, switching to Geico could save you a bunch of money on car insurance?
Okay. Judges? That's true, Kevin. They'll allow it. Congratulations. You're a winner.
Woo!
Geico, because saving 15% or more on car insurance is always a great answer.
Rush into Old Navy today for up to 50% off store-wide. Get dresses from $15 for women, $12 for girls, plus up to 75% off clearance for the whole family right now at Old Navy and OldNavy.com. Valid 10/16 to 10/20, select styles only.